Accession number 24610, room 9.
Mr. Guest, real night. We were talking about how you were in this sort of hospital cum farm, cum POW camp, after you've been taken prisoner by the Chinese North Koreans. I wonder that you've talked about the interrogator. What about the actual hospital staff, you know, the people who were looking after you?
Yes, I. There were a few personnel. I think some of the nursing staff were not billeted, actually, on the farm. I think possibly the doctor and the lead, in inverted commas, nurse stayed, or quite nearby, and then the other personnel would come in during the day. I suppose on duty there would be three or four nursing staff, and then there'd be the doctor and his immediate charge nurse, shall I say. They didn't wear typical nurses' uniforms at all. They just wore the Chinese standard military issue. This was khaki coloured drill type material. Little peak caps and plimsolls on the feet. They do various duties, dressing wounds and generally attending to our bodily needs. We would get water to wash in, clean teeth. This was rather difficult for me because, as I said before, I was in a hip spiker and pretty well incapacitated. It was at this time that I developed osteomyelitis, which is inflammation of the bone, and it was causing me some discomfort, and so it was decided that they would take the hip spiker off, which they did. My leg was not in too bad a condition, although it was producing quite a lot of pus due to the osteomyelitis. And it was finally decided that they would operate on me and find out the cause of the problem. I was taken into a semi-open area at the side of the gateway, which was really a stable enclosure, although there were no animals in there. There was a pine bench, straight branches really, covered over in straw, and then on top of that was a waterproof sheet, I would think something like a poncho. And there was a small dividing wall into a compartment next door, which housed a cattle trough and another bench. And the doctor's surgeon came in. Excuse me, a surgeon came in from outside. I'd not met him before. He was obviously a senior medical type, and he examined me, and there was a conference between the two doctors, and they scrubbed up, laid me on the bed, and proceeded to get to work. Now, this at the start of this, the anaesthetic was a spinal anaesthetic, I believe what you might call an epidural today. I was sat up on the bed, which was a bit traumatic because my leg was quite painful, and leant forward until they found a space between the vertebrae, pushed the needle in and administered the anaesthetic, and then laid me on my back, and they swabbed my leg with iodine. The operation began. They were obviously cutting and tugging and one thing and another. I'd felt no pain. My heartbeat had increased by this time because I was a little bit apprehensive, and there was no machinery around me, of course. All the monitoring was done by feel and sight, I had a nurse with a finger constantly on the pulse in my neck, and she would be calling out the pulse rate. And whilst they were pulling and tugging away at my leg, they removed a number of pieces of bone that were sort of floating about in the, within the fleshy area, and they also broke off edges of the femur that had got the problem in them. I was sewn up and I was allowed to rest on the bed without any splints or plaster on my leg, and this was attended to throughout the ensuing days for 4 or 5 days, I suppose, and then it was given a good dose of sulfanilamide powder, and wrapped up, and then I was again put into a plaster, but this time only from the bottom of the foot up to the upper thigh. I wasn't in a hip spiker anymore. Whilst I was in this room, we had a supply of cigarettes or tobacco given to us by the Chinese, and we had obviously a small towel, soap, and some toothpaste, and so with this supply of tobacco, paper was always a difficulty, and there were other Chinese guys around that were being hospitalised by for some reason or other, and they would I shared a room with a chap named Chang Yung. Chang Yung was quite a nice young man, obviously very proud of his race, and I would have thought a very good soldier, and quite an affable lad to try and chat to, although the language barrier was a difficulty. What we couldn't say, we conveyed by sign language, and he used to tear me strips off newspapers and one thing and another. And then one day he was moved out. He got some problems with his sinus, and they were douching his nose twice a day with a water, like a cataract thing. And a tube was placed up his nose, and they would pour water down a funnel, and it would obviously percolate around his sinuses and come out of his other nostril. He went away, and I was on my own for a couple of days or so, and then the senior nurse was brought into my room, and he'd had an operation for piles, and this was quite disturbing, because he was I would say his pain threshold was very, very low, and he didn't lay on the bed. He was on his hands and knees moaning and groaning for at least 48 hours, and I found this disturbing to my sleep and also to my my own well-being. I think the penicillin injections were still being carried out at this time. And as I said before, when I had the M&B, I had the blood in my urine, but fingers used to come in daily and interrogate me even though I was laying on my back, and it was him who told me to drink plenty of water with the medication, and he also conveyed to me short passages of Chinese to say that I've had enough food, or could I have some more, and this sort of thing.
What about the farm people? Because the farm was still a working farm.
Oh yeah, it was still a working farm. There was the farmer, and his wife, and two children. I should say, little boy. It was a little boy. I suppose he would be four or five. It would be difficult to say. And then a little girl. She would be probably seven or eight, something like this. And he would go out tend the fields. There was also a young woman that used to be in attendance on the farm. I'm not quite sure whether she was a servant or what, but she was there also. I recall in about August time, I suppose, they brought the rice harvest in, and this was laid outside on a flat area just outside my room, and then they thrashed it with flails. Then the straw was gathered up, and the resulting grain that was left, and the dust and one thing another, this was gathered up and into baskets, flat baskets, and this young woman and the wife of the farmer would sit there, and with another couple of women that I presume came from a village nearby, and they would proceed to toss this slightly into the air to winnow the grain and get the chaff out, etc. During this time in the room on my own, it was very, very hot and humid, and I developed a rash on my body, on all the touching parts really, and this was attended to. I was powdered and made a bit more comfortable by the Chinese, because I don't know if I did say, but I'd got no clothes on whatsoever. All I'd got was the blanket covering me, and I'd got this plaster cast on my leg. Coming back to smoking the tobacco, I recall asking one of the attendants to get me a bit of paper to roll a cigarette, and he tore a strip off of the rice paper covered window. It's a lattice type frame with this paper glued to it. And he stripped a piece of paper off, and I rolled a cigarette and smoked it. I don't think the taste of the paper was all that great, but I couldn't really. I was in no position to argue about this. But anyway, this went on for some time, and by the time I was ready to be moved from this room, I'd actually smoked that window, and it was all gone. The children of the farm, they didn't have a lot to do with us. They saw us, and they acknowledged us from a distance, but there was no real contact between us. They were a happy little couple. They used to play games, and there was one I can remember in particular. They caught a big beetle and tied a cotton to it, and they were sort of pulling this beetle around one thing another, and then they tied it to a stick which they stuck in the ground, and somehow, I don't know how, they managed to do it, but they goaded this beetle into flight, and it would fly angrily around this stick. And obviously, as it went round the stick, so the cotton wound on, and eventually the beetle would finish up buzzing angrily at the stick, and whereupon the kids would lift the stick up, unwind the beetle, and start it all over again. I don't recall what happened to the beetle, but I know this went on for quite some time, and the kids were very excited and happy about this. There used to be an old guy, an old Korean gentleman. He was quite a sophisticated man, really. He did sort of nod to me as he went past my room, And he used to sit on the veranda, as it were, under the shade of the overhanging roof, and smoke his pipe with the other, with the farmer. I think they were both elders of some sort, because they wore the white traditional clothes of the Koreans, plus the funny shaped hat. You know, the one that you lean up against the wall with, and it it stops your head from moving. It's got like two wings on it. Outside my room during that time, in one of the beams, because the general construction of the farmhouse was typical Korean structure. Upright tree trunks at intervals to take the weight of the roof, etc., etc., and beams going across to tie it all in. At the intersection of one of these uprights and the beams coming across from the roof, just outside my doorway, a couple of swallows had built their nest, and they were bringing up the youngsters. And there was a couple of cats that used to belong to the farm, and one of them would persistently sit at the bottom of this vertical timber, looking up at the chicks, or listen to the noise of the chicks in the nest. And the parent birds used to get very irate at this cat, and they would literally dive bomb this cat until it got fed up and went away. I don't recall the birds flying, but I don't think the cat ever managed to shin the pole and raid the nest. I'd been in this room for some period of time. I don't know how long, because time is difficult to assimilate. There was no indication of whether it was Sunday or Wednesday or whatever. Days just came and went, and it was the usual humdrum life.
How well do they think? I mean, did you feel they were treating you well?
Yeah, I thought they were treating me fairly well. Fingers did threaten me a couple of times that if I didn't cooperate, they would withdraw medical succour, but this never happened. The medication, or shall I say the surgical procedures, were shall I say quite aggressive. They were crude but effective. I know that the wound on the shoulder, the tissue started granulating. This is like a little bubble of skin. Instead of the flesh growing across the wound, it grows up into a little bubble, and it's called granulation of the tissues, and it prevents the inward growth of tissue to close the wound up. And so I had it two or three times. I had it cut off, but this was effectively done, but quite painful to me. It was just snipped off with a pair of scissors and leaving an open wound to heal across, which it did eventually, after two or three lots of treatment and the dusting of sulphur powder. Before I had my operation, they gave me an enema. That was very uncomfortable, especially as I was laying flat on my back. I upset a Chinese attendant one day. He was bending over my leg, and he'd got his back to me. And I playfully tapped him up the backside with my left foot. And apparently, I didn't realise this at the time, but the biggest insult you can give to a Chinaman is to kick his arse. And he went absolutely berserk. Of course, I apologised, and he didn't know what I was saying, and he reported me to the doctor, and the doctor came in and wagged his finger and one thing and another, but the excitement died down after a little while. Eventually, I was moved into a little outbuilding, not far away from the farm, and it was a room about, I suppose, 8 foot square, probably 6 foot high to the eaves, and a little little pitch roof. And I was put into a onto a palliasse there. And shortly afterwards, they brought two more Americans in. One was a guy named Albert Chicken, who came from Newark in New Jersey. And the other one was a guy called Arthur Gregory. He came from Mount Vernon, Illinois. Chicken had been wounded in the foot, and his wounds were healing quite well. And he received a treatment, and really, most of the treatment was really rest. There wasn't a great deal of intensive attendance, shall we say, but they kept their eye on us. And but Gregory was he'd been captured in February of 1952, before I was, and. Apparently, he'd caught the blast and the shrapnel of an 88mm shell, which fell short during an attack. So really, his wounds were of friendly fire type, and I don't know what happened to the patrol or the attack, but anyway, the Chinese picked Gregory up and. Took him prisoner. His wounds were very bad. The flesh had been stripped from his upper left arm. He got shrapnel wounds in both legs, and his left hand was seemed to be permanently fixed, with his fingers extended. And I didn't think that he would ever. Go back home and put a full day's work in. However, a couple of years ago, I had a call from Arthur Gregory, and he went back home after being repatriated, and he was hospitalised and brought into the into fairly good condition, and he did various jobs like farming and. He had a little garage and one thing another, and he finished up owning real estate. And he actually came over here, and we had a week together, and it was a good reunion. On October the 1st, that was the first time I'd really ascertained a date of any kind, and it was a Chinese. Festival day or some important day in the Chinese calendar, and as there were a number of Chinese staff on this farm, and they were being fed at the same time as us, quite a spread was made that day. We had deep fried peanuts, soup, rice and vegetables, a bit of pork. And then we were treated to candied yams, which is like sweet potatoes, and these were diced up and boiled with sugar, and really like almost like a toffee apple, only in a peanut brittle type of sense. Although it was eaten warm, I wasn't too keen on it myself. I don't really like sweet potatoes, but it was a welcome change from the normal diet. In the morning, normally the food consisted of beans, probably with a bit of meat in, perhaps a little bit of vegetable. Midday was sort of thin, soupy rice. Then in the evening there would be rice with a bowl of vegetable soup, perhaps a little bit of meat thrown in. I was with Gregory and Chikin for 2 or 3 weeks, and then Chikin and I were shipped out.
Well, this would be in October.
In October, yeah. Chikin and I were shipped out. It's starting to get cold then, and Chikin and I were shipped out, and we went northwards on the back of a truck. And we stopped at a little village, and we were taken into this house, and we were given a meal of some sort. I can't quite recall. And it was there, I think, that I met Peter Booth. He was a soldier from the Welch Regiment, and he'd been caught on patrol. He'd been wounded in the back of the head. It took a lump out the back of his head, and it actually rendered him blind. Not completely blind, but as near as damn it, he could just make out shadowy figures, but he couldn't recognise anything like a book or writing or anything like this. And I also met a Captain Philip Greville. He was in the Australian Engineers, and he was out on a recce with another with a private soldier, I think, or a corporal, I'm not quite sure. Anyway, lower rank, he was out on patrol looking at minefields and one thing and another, and the lower rank soldier was a chap named Dennis Condon, or Condren, no Condon, sorry, Dennis Condon, an Englishman, but joined the Australian Army. I met him in the camp, and we talked about Philip together, and we stayed there just the one night, and we were moved out the following morning, and I still couldn't walk by this time. I'd still got a plaster on my leg, and Philip actually picked me up and carried me and put me on the side of the truck. We then moved off, and we ended up in some wooden hutments with a number of American prisoners of war. But we only stopped there a couple of nights, and then we were moved on again, again by truck, and we finished up at Phiap Tong, which is a town on the Yalu River, by the side of a reservoir. We were moved to a building up on the top of the hill, which was an old Buddhist temple. Although the building was still standing, I don't think there'd been any religious ceremonies carried on there for some time, possibly due to the fact of the Japanese occupation, and also due to the fact that the Chinese, shall we say, have got an aversion to religion. Anyway, we were moved into this temple type building. There was another outbuilding by side of it, which we went into for a couple of days until things were sorted out in the larger building, and we were moved into there. We had beds of sorts. They were two little wooden trestles with three planks on, and a straw palliasse on top of this, and two or three blankets. As the weather got colder, we were issued with cotton padded clothes and plimsolls with a thickened padding on the cloth part. The interrogation had stopped by this time, and we were left pretty much to ourselves.